The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. Keep your mission on your mind, and your mind on your mission. This is Mission Minded with Michael Coleman.
Along with Michael Coleman, CEO of the Heart of Alabama Food Bank, I'm Tony Curry. This is Mission Minded. Keep your mind, your mission on your mind, my friend. 10 o'clock every Monday through Friday morning, 10 o'clock Central Time. You can hear right here on the TKR app. Thanks to thousands of listeners, and of course, even more so on our podcast. Wherever you get your podcast, Tony Curry Radio Podcast, you can find us on every major industry. Michael, first of all, how you doing, brother? You doing okay?
I'm doing extremely well and could not be more excited. I always look forward to our time together. And excited about today's topic and just getting an opportunity to speak about those things.
And our other show is called Bite by Bite, which is a show specific about food banks and Feeding America and how those work. And that show comes right after this one. So make sure you continue to listen here on the TKR Radio Network. Email question right off the bat, info@tonycurryradio.net. We've got teachers going on strike in Washington State. We've got American Airlines flight attendants talking about striking. We've got the SAG thing going. We've got the writers going on. The UAW clash in about a week against the Big Three. It looks like that's going to happen. We got the locomotive manufacturers who just finished up their strike, reaching a tentative agreement after a two-month strike. And Gavin in Birmingham wants to know, what in the hell's going on with everyone going on strike? Ask Michael Coleman, what's happening to this country of ours? Why is everyone going on strike? Give me a quick, simple answer.
I wish I had it. The bottom line is, it's the tool that people have to use leverage.
Let's back this up just a little bit. Did we see this coming during COVID? And I think you know what I'm talking about, because the employees got a lot more spicy during COVID. We needed more workers. There weren't enough workers. Our unemployment is at all-time low right now. It seems like everyone's getting signing bonuses. Did we not see this coming?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. That whole dynamic, it was, hey, we'll let you work from home. We'll do all that. We'll bend over backwards because, you know, we need you. And it was all about, just getting the right people. And then so the whole millennials and Gen Z were going in right now. And they're like, hey, the workforce is great because I get to do what I want to. I'm in control of my own situation. People are knocking down my door. And now since the tech industry has jettison so many workers, and now they're back to reality, which is what you and I call every day. What we've had to face over the years, you know, we're like telling a boss we're going to work from home, or we're going to do this and we're going to do that. That's a world you and I are not familiar with. But you know, it would be simple to say that, oh, this is all, to put it all in one category. But the truth of the matter is, you would have to get into the nuts and bolts of every single organization that's striking to see what the issues are. And I've addressed some of this before. You know, and of course, we're from the Southeast, and we don't have a lot of unions and stuff like that. Most of us live in right to work states. The truth of the matter is, you can get fired in Alabama if they don't like the color of your shoes. Mm-hmm. And you really don't have much leverage unless you're in a protected group. So, but when people do collectively come together over some legitimate issues, like I said, going back all the way to where unions came about, there were people that were dying and were just asking for safety considerations and, you know, just, and they had no leverage. And so unions were very necessary. To me, much less so today, because there's just a lot of competition out there for jobs. And if you're a good worker and you don't feel like this is a good environment, you're not getting paid what you're worth. Typically, if you truly have a set of values, I mean, not a set of values, but a set of gifts and abilities, then, you know, you can market those to other companies. Where back in the day, where you were growing up in a town, everybody worked at this place or everybody worked at that place, and they didn't have any choices to go to other towns and work and stuff like that. So the world's totally different. However, having said that, there are some issues sometimes that at least some believe are worth striking over, and the only leverage, they may have complained about this for years to management. Management's fallen on a deaf ear. I'm not saying management's right or wrong or the workers are right or wrong, but they just feel like hey, this is our only opportunity to get what we want. Now, I will tell you, you see like the UPS drivers that have parlayed themselves into six figures. And I mean, hey, great, good for them. But you have to wonder where it's all headed in our world, because the bottom line is UPS is not taking that on the chin.
No.
They're going to pass those costs off to us.
And most in most cases, it's like that. And listen, you know, I work in the radio industry, and I've been still doing it now for over 40 years. And I've always thought I got paid really well for what I did, because it's not hard labor. I was working 6-7 hours a day. I really loved my job. When you love your job, you're willing to work for a lot less. That's why a lot of people that are radio for 40 years are making $30,000 a year, and they're happy.
Right.
And so I've always come to the realization, I never saw the bottom line of my business. I never saw the millions and millions of dollars they were making. I know there were lean times, there were good times. What's your thoughts on when people are making, I don't know what an average bricklayer makes or what an average widget maker makes. And then they see their business, in this particular case, I'm going to use the car business. Evidently, there are just absolutely record amounts of money being made in the big three right now. And that's where the UAW workers are like, we want to work 32 hours a week, and we want 30% pay increases, and we want more benefits. And that just sounds so exorbitant and so crazy to me that they'd even ask. I realize in negotiations, you always ask for more than what you're going to plan to get, but they're asking for a 32-hour work week, which is crazy to me, but yet their businesses are making billions of dollars. But there's also lean times. We've seen that over history. What's your thoughts on that? Asking for it and getting it while the getting's good, but eventually you're going to be the first one laid off too.
Well, I tend to think the marketplace ends up sorting itself out when it gets out of balance over time. So typically what the workers are not thinking about, so let's just take this whole push. And in Alabama, I don't know if it's across the nation, but in Alabama, they consider $15 a living wage. Now, here at the food bank, we pay a living wage. Nobody here makes less than $15 an hour. And I do think that's important, but that's a cultural value that I hold as the leader of the organization. But back when they were talking about, you know, McDonald's, and let's take McDonald's out of it, it could be fast food. You typically think there's no skill set. Those are entry-level positions that people with no education, no particular skill sets can be taught and do this. And so you have to say, well, what is the cost? I mean, is that something that really, is it a business responsibility to make sure that regardless of what it is that everybody's making a living wage? Or is fast food an entry-level working position that enables you to work, gain some skills, and then go on to a job that pays more of that? Well, what sometimes the workers don't see is they force the issue and a law passes or whatever, and they get exactly what they asked for. And the owner goes, okay, well, I've got 30 people who work here who are making $12 an hour. Now you're making me do $3 an hour more for all. I can't pay for all that. So now I'm going to eliminate 10.
Yeah.
And so the people who stay get a higher wage, but 10 people may lose their job. And he just has to get leaner and meaner. And then, of course, that includes pay hikes. But the workers oftentimes approach a situation and force things to their detriment, because they can, I've seen businesses push so hard and so high that the owner relents to it. And then they find out I can no longer compete in the marketplace. So now I file for bankruptcy.
Mm-hmm.
And so, or you have a big company like GM, Ford, or whatever. And that's why all the car companies are relocating to the Southeast.
Yeah.
It's because, you know, right now, just in Alabama. So Alabama's taken over as the new car capital of the United States. So Toyota, Mazda's building the billion-dollar plant, but they're on a joint thing. We have Mercedes, who's been here 20 or 30 years, 25 years. Honda, who's been here 20 or 30 years. Hyundai's headquarters is right here. And everywhere you turn, and it's because, now, of course, there's challenges with the workforce, but they know when they come here that there's not that kind of leverage that workers are going to use against them, and that can be quite attractive. Now, again, people say, well, you need to unionize, because then it forces them that Hyundai could pay more. Well, that may be or may be true, may not, may or may not be true, but the bottom line is you got to understand where the marketplace is going to allow. You can say, I want $30 an hour for a job that normally would pay $20 an hour. Mm-hmm. I'm demanding $30. And you have to understand, okay, is it easier for them to pay $30 an hour, or is it easier for them, is there six people in line already that has the same skill set that want your job that are not going to be complaining and griping about your salary all the time?
Yeah.
I mean, those are all the things. Like right here at the food bank, we have people in the warehouse, and then we have drivers. And right now we struggle with CDL drivers. And one of the things I've had to do is up our salary to get quality people. But the marketplace is demanding that.
Yeah.
It's not inferior drivers who are standing up and saying, I demand more. It is, I can't get good drivers in at our old. So the marketplace is determining what the worth is. And I'm continuing to have to increase. Right now, I've got a $3,000 sign-on bonus that you get after 90 days. But so we've upped it, you know, about $10,000 from where we were a year ago, plus a $3,000 signing bonus, plus full benefits, plus. And the bottom line is, if I still can't, if that's not enough to attract more drivers, then yeah, right. I've either got to say I got to pay more, or I've got to not transport as much.
Yeah.
I mean, but the marketplace is going to ultimately decide that, and not what the workers demand.
I think when it comes to these unions and these strikes, it comes down to seniority. I think that has a big place in it. Obviously, guys higher up are going to want more things because they know they can't get fired. And a lot of people below them probably can. And the other thing is just be careful what you ask for, because, I mean, that bubble will burst eventually. I wish.
Well, you think about, too, the media and the role that it plays. So, you know, they said if the media declared today that the greatest national security issue was we have a shortage of mustard, then you would see people run out to the stores and start hoarding mustard, you know, because that's the influence that our media has today. And so when media gets into the politics and they put big in front of it, it's big farming, big pharma, big oil, big insurance, big whatever. Then the little guy, it creates resentment, like, you know what? I'm getting screwed by these big guys. Mm-hmm. They should be paying me more, without understanding at all what it takes for most mom and pops to survive and what the total margins are. And so, but that's all festered. They're sitting there watching TV at night and they get a commercial of, hey, you're getting screwed out there. You should be getting more. And they're like, yeah, I should be getting more. And it just creates discontent, and that dissatisfaction boils over into all sorts of workplace issues. And it's just the cost of doing business, but it's really sad to see.
We got big Michael Coleman joining us right here for Mission Minded. We do it every single week. Heart of Alabama Food Bank, HAFB.org. You check them out, or hashtag HAFB. You wanted to get into the 10 rules of a great conversationalist. And I'll go down one by one here, and you just kind of chime in on this. And I love this because I consider myself somewhat extroverted. I know you're an extroverted kind of guy. You love to shake hands and kiss babies. Number one, be genuinely interested in the person. That seems like a no-brainer to me.
One of the things I've told people who are introverts but have to still talk about, so they want to avoid big crowds typically, but they also understand they've got to sell their product, whether it's a business, whether it's a nonprofit. So nonprofits are selling solutions to societal problems, but it's still a salesman's job.
Yeah.
And, you know, the idea that people go out there, they're just miserable doing that. And I said, listen, if you walk up to somebody and this is going to really probably touch on a few of these points, but if you just walk up and you want to demand their attention for your product, that's typically not going to go over well. And people go, well, I don't know what to talk about. And I said, you can have a conversation and maintain a conversation with anybody if you just simply take an interest in what they do. So a good example is, there's nobody that knows less about fine wine than me. And but I found myself talking to the owner of a wine shop. And I'm like, you know, I've always been fascinated by people who could tell the differences in wine and were very descriptive and had a palate for it. I've never been that. Are you good at that? And What are some of the things, like for me, if I was interested in drinking wine, what are some of the things, what are the things that I should know just as an absolute novice and beginner? So now what I've done is, in just that short amount of time, I inflated his ego because I'm treating him as an expert. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, hey, I'm at your mercy. Teach me something about something you're passionate about. So I've engaged, I've acted interested. And it can't be fake. I mean, I am somebody. My wife says I run her crazy because I'm always asking questions. I'm inquisitive to learn new things. But people love it when you say, you do this? Oh, well, tell me about that. I really have always thought it was this. And so when you engage, but here's how you show whether you're genuine or not. And this is very difficult in a large setting. I've been talking with people, and I have somebody that I've been dying to talk to walks by me. And you know, your eyes start darting, and he's right in the middle of explaining a question that you just asked about. And your eyes are darting over here, and you're showing to the left and to the right, and you're looking around the room. And he says, oh, he's really not interested. He's looking for the next conversation.
Yeah.
And so no matter what it takes, you have to lock eyes until you finish that thought or that person finishes their thought. And it's like, oh, excuse me, I see somebody that I've got to talk to. But don't do that before that conversation, because then you leave, you create this this lack of authenticity. And that is very damaging. That will leave such a bad taste in people's mouths.
Are you a toucher? If you want to talk to somebody, do you touch them? Because I have been in a lot of situations where people wanted to talk to me at concerts, and they can tell that I'm genuinely being disinterested with an individual who will not leave me alone. And so they'll touch my, and it'll give me the opportunity to kind of draw away. Are you a toucher? Do you touch sleeves?
I am.
Yeah.
And I would tell you, and it goes back to my parents, both were very affectionate. And so I can end up wrapping my arm around somebody, not thinking at all, even about what I'm doing. And I have to be so mindful about the messages. But some people take utter offense. If I were to reach out and just, while I'm talking with them, their arms are kind of crossed, and I just reach out and I just tap on their forearm or something. I mean, people get upset about those kinds of things. And so again, that's something I have to be very mindful of.
I always keep, and I'm not a toucher when I'm having a conversation. What I mean by that is when you're talking to someone that constantly has to touch you because you obviously aren't interested in what they're talking about, they have to keep letting you know, I got to say something else to you. And they keep tapping your stomach or tapping your arm. That's something else. Top 10 rules of great conversationalists. Number 2, focus on the positives. This seems like another one of those obvious ones, but not really, because misery loves company. And I've seen a lot of relationships start out of negative comments.
Well, I tell you, my first 21 years as an adult, I spent in the military, and there's an old adage about, you know, you get more than two soldiers together for more than 30 seconds, you've got a great just pissing contest, just a gripe session, okay? Yeah. Because it is so it's so much easier, just think about, to sit around and just focus on everything that's wrong and speak about that. And just vent and just vomit out all your negativity versus focusing in on what's right. But when you're talking with somebody, and what happens a lot is you'll have a common person or a common group, could be a church association, could be another business, whatever. And the tendency is just, oh, let me tell you, one time I met this guy that's over here, and man, it was just, what a loser. And then you find out it's the guy's brother-in-law or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then, so again, you're destroying relationships. And so you want to keep it positive and just say, it is truly that old saying that our moms taught, if you can't say anything nice, if you're unsure, then you just say, yeah, I've heard a lot about them, you know, and you don't have to say anything positive or negative. But if you have the opportunity to highlight somebody, I always try to do it because I know that person later is going to run into that person and say, you know what? I was talking to Michael Coleman and he sure thinks a lot of you. Mm-hmm. And I'm telling you what, then you've got other people planting seeds for you out there.
That's a beautiful thing.
Very, very, very important.
Number 3, converse, not debate. This is probably easier said than done in the world we live in right now.
Well, let me tell you, I coach on some of these. I've just got some cringeworthy moments as I look back over my life. of specific things. So one of the most, when I was in Birmingham, this was about, let's just say about 5 years ago, and was talking to the ex-mayor of Vestavia Hills. So for our audience who doesn't know, Vestavia Hills is one of the wealthiest communities in not only Birmingham, but in the state. And it was the ex-mayor's wife. And we were having a discussion about poverty. And she didn't happen to see it my way. And I became convinced, well, it's just because she doesn't understand. You know, I needed, and I drilled for whatever reason that night. It was about her attitude or something. I'm like, I'm going to convince this woman. And so there was a moment where she stepped away and I did exactly what you're talking about. I reached out and grabbed her arm and said, let me just close with this one statement. I mean, she was walking away from me and I reached out and grabbed her. And I've thought about how many times if I ran, I guarantee you, I left an image in her or an impression on her, it could not have been good.
These are the 10 rules of great conversationalists. Number 4, respect. Don't impose, criticize, or judge. Again, a lot of these seem like they're pretty obvious, but they really aren't when you start discussing them. Because the reason we're bringing these up is we're reminding you this is what you're supposed to do if you want to be a great conversationalist. Because, oh, of course I respect people. And then you're 5 minutes into a conversation, you realize you're saying something you shouldn't.
Well, you know, I find myself oftentimes, if you're having any sort of meaningful conversation, you're going to ultimately probably have a clash of values or beliefs. And it could be about the marketplace and where your product fits into the marketplace. I mean, let's say you're a car salesman and they may be thinking, oh, I have this view. I only like American-made cars, and you sell foreign cars. And so then you start to judge and criticize, and it can come out in your tone. It can come out in your looks. And you always just want to be very mindful of being respectful for where people are, because you want that do unto others kind of thing. Because, look, we've all been shaped by our experiences and circumstances. And I've had great experience with foreign cars. It's been a long time. Now, I do own a Hyundai, but Hyundai is made right here in Montgomery. But it's been a long time since I owned a Ford or a GM car. And I got tan on that back when I was growing up, when it went through those quality issues and all the Japanese and German cars started coming. It was just a better quality car. I don't know if that's the case now or not. But anyway, I've just always stuck away. But you've got people that'll just arm wrestle you right there over the fact that if you don't buy GM or Ford, you're a communist. Yep. You know.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So when I run into that, you kind of have to say, okay, I see it for what it is. There's absolutely no value in trying to convince them, because all I'm going to do is destroy a potential relationship. It's that whole thing about picking your fights and what hill do you want to die on? When was the last time you ever got on arguing with somebody on Facebook and all of a sudden they came back and go, well, hell, I never thought of it like that. You're totally right.
Good luck.
I have totally changed my view based on your last comment.
It ain't going to happen on social media, my friend. It is not. He is the Heart of Alabama Food Bank CEO, Michael Coleman. This is Mission Monday. You can hear this show every Monday through Friday, right around 10 o'clock. Our next show, Bite by Bite, a fantastic show, airs right after this, right around 10:30, Monday through Friday, on the TKR app, where you get your podcast. So last night, I'm having a back and forth with a friend of mine, a female friend who I had not spoken to in quite some time. And she writes, take care and keep doing what you're doing. I can tell your current life choices are great and you impress me. I hope you pat yourself on the back every once in a while because you've accomplished what many do not. Be proud of yourself, Tony. And I'm telling you, yesterday wasn't one of my best days of my life. And I'm sitting there at 9:30 last night and I get that. And I slept well last night just because I got a text from a friend of mine I hadn't heard from in years, who obviously is following me somehow or some way and realizing what I'm doing. And that is number 5, put the person in his or her best light. That just made me feel good about what I was doing. And of course, I really appreciate that from this young lady. But talk about that a little bit. This is super important.
Well, first of all, that comment is well deserved. So I'll jump on that bandwagon. Well,
thank you.
But yeah, so let's go back to some. So I'm in the nonprofit space and I'm talking about, I could be talking about poverty, which I talk a lot about, or food insecurity. And again, let's say somebody else is in this space, but has a totally different perspective. And you leave there that their approach, in your opinion, is 100% wrong. And I've been there. And if you can leave that conversation and you're like, well, how can I, I'm going to be unauthentic.
Unauthentic.
I'm going to lack authenticity. Sometimes I can't even talk. I'm going to lack authenticity if I compliment them on something that's not true. But there's always something if you're looking. And there's lots of times where I've complimented people and I said, well, you know what? I love your passion for this problem. You know, I may, in my head, I might be going, you could not be more ass backward in your approach to solving it. But I 100% love your passion and what you're doing and can leave it on a positive note, handshake, and hey, let's do lunch sometime, something like that. And again, just doing that, it has such a lasting impact.
All right. We've got five more of these and I'm going to hold off until next week because we're up against
it. Okay. Yeah, that's great.
We got Bite by Bite coming up here next, but great list of 10 rules of the great conversationalist. If you missed any of these, please go podcast the show. You can listen to it anytime on the TKR app. And of course, wherever you get your favorite podcast, info@TonyCurryRadio.net. You are with the Heart of Alabama Food Bank, and we do a show specific to that and food banks in their needs. But talk about how people that can help you out.
Yeah, go to hafb.org if you are interested in supporting what we're doing. We are really trying to help those right now, just the economy. And so many of us are blessed to be able to make ends meet. But there's so many out there, our neighbors, who are working hard, husband and wife, both working, trying to provide for their families. But just due to the economy and inflationary demands, it just can't make ends meet. And so if it's not something we're doing, look within your local community and find a food bank or find something else that you're passionate about where a nonprofit is closing the gap in your community and making a difference. And I just want to encourage you to support them. And if you don't have anybody that you care about, hey, come support us. We can always use the help. But thank y'all for listening. I love our audience. I love the emails. I love the questions. Keep them coming. And it's a thrill to get to be a part of this show.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.